I want you to turn to 2 Chronicles, Old Testament book, 2 Chronicles. It's probably a verse that is used more for revival than any other verse that I know of, especially in this day in which we are now. But it's 2 Chronicles 7:14. If my people which are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face, turn from their wicked way, then will I hear from heaven, forgive their sins, and heal their land. And we've talked so much about that, and there's been so much said about that in churches, in services, on social media. I see that verse so many times on Facebook or on Twitter. I see that, and I wonder if we really understand what it's talking about. But that's the verse to which I go today. 2 Chronicles chapter 7, I'm going to really look at verses 12, 13, and 14. But those verses down through there, I want you to see the timing of these verses and where we are in the whole scheme of Scripture and in the history of God's working with people, where we are in that. David has died. David's son Solomon has ascended to the throne with the commission to build a house for the worship of God. And he has built the house. And when the house is completed, when the temple is complete, Solomon has them make a scaffolding, because there's thousands and thousands of people that are there for the opening of the temple. They have come from all over Israel. They have come from all over the world. And they're there for the opening of this temple. And they build a scaffolding up, and Solomon gets on top of the scaffolding. This is the king. He gets on the top there, and he offers his prayer to God. And chapter 6 is the offering of the prayer, where he prays, a rather long prayer, but a well thought out prayer, and a prayer about the people of God. Though the place, the temple, the building has been built, yet he prays not for the building so much as he prays for the people. And there are two words that permeate his prayer, though neither word is used by him. They are words that we understand from what he's praying. The first word he prays about is judgment. He talks about the judgment of God on sin. And he says, if the people turn from this place, if they turn from you, God, and bring upon themselves and upon the land judgment. And we're going to look at a couple of things that are involved in that. He said, then, Lord, somehow, if your people turn back to you, would you revive and refresh them? And would you turn your blessings back on this place? Now, if the two words mean anything, they mean this. Judgment is the outpouring of God's wrath on a person, on a family, on a church, on a nation. It is the wrath of God coming. It may come in different ways, in different levels of severity. But it is the judgment of God that comes. His wrath revealed. And it's not just arbitrary. It's not just God said, well, I don't think I like him. Boom, I want to judge him. No, it's not that. It's a result of sin. It's a result of sin. Then if that individual that church, that family, that nation turns back to God, then they begin experiencing the blessings of God. Now, I'm not talking about just physical things any more than judgment is just a physical thing, though there are physical aspects of it. But there are spiritual aspects of it. The joy of the Lord is my strength. The happiness that comes from God's fulfillment. The peace that comes in homes. The peace that comes in our own hearts. The peace that comes and the joy, the refreshing of a time of being in church. The refreshing from the Lord. Now, how does that happen? How can these words that are so different, judgment, with all the darkness that surrounds that, and revival, with all the joy that surrounds that, and all the refreshing that surrounds that, it seems in these verses that they're very closely related. That they have a lot of things in common. And I think in these verses that I read to you now, and follow with me if you'd like, in verse 12, after Solomon finishes his prayer, in the first part of chapter 7, God's glory fills the temple. And that night, after everybody goes home, Solomon has prayed this prayer, and God appears to him in verse 12. The Lord appeared to Solomon by night and said unto him, I have heard thy prayer and have chosen this place to myself for a house of sacrifice. Now look what God says. After Solomon has prayed about this, look what God says. He says three times in this verse, If I, this is God speaking, if I shut up heaven that there be no rain, or if I command the locusts to devour the land, that means to devour everything on the land, you know what locusts do, or if I send pestilence, that's a terrible, fatal disease. If I send pestilence among my people, that's judgment. That's judgment. Verse 14. If my people. Now he says, if I. Now in verse 14 he says, if my people. Now it's going from God to his people. If my people, which are called by my name, shall humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways. So obviously, the reason he shut up heaven or commanded the locusts or sent the pestilence is because his people became proud, did not pray, did not seek his face, and were involved in wicked ways. That's obvious. That's just what he's saying. That's what's there. He said, but if they will do that, obviously the things that came or because they did those things, he said, then if they will do this, people, his people, called by his name, humble themselves, pray, seek my face, turn from their wicked ways, then will I. If my people, then will I hear from heaven, forgive their sins, and heal their land. What a wonderful promise. And I know people say, well, that's the Old Testament. That's the opening of the temple. That's in Solomon's day. That's not a promise. That's for our day. That's for the Jews. That's not for us. And it's a different day, a different time, a different place, a different thing, a different meaning. All those kinds of things I hear people say about that. But if you go over into the prophets later on in the Old Testament, you come to a book called the Book of Jonah. And Jonah is a man that we generally associate with being swallowed by the great fish, the whale. And we identify him with that and his sin and throwing down into the water out of the boat, and then the whale swallows him up and takes him to the bottom of the sea and so forth like that. And then someone said even a whale can't stomach an out of the will of God preacher, and so he vomits him up on dry land. And the word of the Lord came to him again in chapter 2. And he said, go preach to Nineveh, that great city, and preaching that I bid to thee. And so he goes and preaches to Nineveh. Now, Nineveh is a Gentile city. It's a Gentile city. It's not a Jewish city. It's a Gentile city. And whenever he goes and preaches there, very simple message. He said, yet 40 days and Nineveh is going to be destroyed. Why? Because of their sin. Because of their idolatry. Because of their going against the God of heaven. They were not Jews. They were not technically God's people as far as being Jews. But we are all God's people in one sense of the word. And so whenever they hear that, the king hears that. And he says in verse 6, the word came to the king of Nineveh. He arose from his throne, he laid down his robe from him, and covered him with sackcloth and set in ashes. Now that is in the Old Testament, in that day, an act of humility. He took off his kingly garments, he put on sackcloth, and he set in ashes. He humbled himself. Like it said in 2 Chronicles. Chapter 7, verse 14. It's another time, it's another place, but the principle is there. He humbles himself. And then he caused it to be proclaimed and published throughout Nineveh that the king and his nobles say, let neither man nor beast, herd nor flock taste anything. Let them not feed nor drink water. They went on a fast. And he said, let them be clothed with sackcloth and cry mightily to God. So they fasted and prayed. If people called by my name humble themselves and pray. And obviously they were seek the face of God. Yea, he says in verse 8, now this is the king of Nineveh saying to the people of his dominion, let them turn everyone from his evil way and the violence that is in his hand and turn from their wicked ways. It's the same process. A different time, a different place, hundreds of years later, in a Gentile city. Verse 10, God saw their works that they turned from their evil way, and God repented of the evil that he had said that he would do unto them, and he did it not. Don't you think if God said to that, God gave the formula to his people in 2 Chronicles chapter 7, and don't you think that if, though it was not given directly to Nineveh, and I doubt that the king of Nineveh knew 2 Chronicles 7:14, I don't think there's any way he knew that Old Testament passage. But he followed the pattern or the formula that God had given. And it worked for him. Why wouldn't it work for us? Now, we are God's people. If we're born again children of God, we are called Christians. That involves the name of Christ. We are called by His name. We're His people, called by His name. Don't you think that if we humbled ourselves and prayed and sought the face of the Lord and turned from our wicked ways? that God might just hear from heaven, forgive our sins, and heal our land? Now, I don't know whether you think our land needs healing or not. But I'm going to tell you one thing right now, from my perspective, as an old-fashioned gospel preacher, our land needs a healing. Who would have believed where we are? I read some things yesterday, a lady who had heard me preach, 10 years ago? And she sent an article to me. And in that article, it detailed some things that are going on. Some things that are being taught in our schools. And she said, "Preacher, I remember when you stood in the pulpit and said this was going to happen. And I really didn't believe it. But," she said, "here it is." I wrote back and I said, "I'm sorry that I was a prophet that was correct." What a sad, sad thing it is. The greed of our government, the violence of our land. Now, I don't know whether you observe this or not, and I know it's not a thing we talk about much, but I'm going to tell you right now, you young people that are here, the video games that are available to our young people now are filled with blood, guts, and violence. It's just all like that. And the more violent it is, the better they like it. And I know, boxing has been around forever. But the things that they're doing now, put a bunch of guys in a cage and let them beat each other until there's not but one left standing. And I understand there's people are intrigued by that. And they're entertained by that. But I'm going to tell you, if there's one thing consistent throughout all of the Word of God that God hates, it's violence. God hates violence because violence is only cured by someone inflicting a greater violence to make them stop it. Now, your mother's here today. Their mother's here today. You know what happens whenever those kids start fighting. You know what has to be done. Somebody stronger has to stop it. That's the only way to stop it, is for somebody stronger to stop it. And the only way it's going to stop between Iran and another Muslim country, Saudi Arabia, right now with their missiles, of course aimed at Israel, but aimed at each other too. The violence of North Korea against South Korea. And the violence in our land. Now, I don't know whether you understand this or not, because we may not see it so much, but there is a violence in our land that is defended. And the violence of abortion against our very most helpless human beings, the violence against them. I think that we as a nation are accountable before God for the violence we have inflicted. Wickedness. Wickedness. It's not just an undefined group of cells. As one woman in Congress said this week, whatever it is, in a woman's belly when she's pregnant is not a human. Well, what in the world could it be? When a dog is expecting, what's she expecting? She's expecting puppies. Little dogs. But there's something different about humans. Whatever this woman, it wasn't right. There's nothing, it ought not be like this, just evidence of violence. Takes a bunch of puppies she doesn't want and throws them in a dumpster and somebody sees it on a video and people are calling for her to be killed and to be locked up and jailed for life. All that kind of stuff. And yet, in North Carolina, when the bill was passed that if a child is born surviving an abortion, it is to be left to die. And one doctor bragged about taking a child that survived an abortion and turning its face down into the water. How do we do that? How do we do that? And by one vote, the Senate voted to override the veto of the governor. But the governor of North Carolina vetoed that bill. I know it's Mother's Day, but mothers, your heart ought to beat for that. You know what that means. You know what that is. I'm going to give you four things very quickly about the similarities between judgment and revival. And number one is this. The source of both is the same. The source of judgment is God, and the source of revival is God. God says, if I shut up heaven, it doesn't rain. If I send the locusts, if I send pestilence, that's judgment. He says, then if my people humble themselves, pray, seek my face, turn their wicked ways, I'll hear. Then I will hear from heaven, forgive their sins, heal their land. God said, here's the situation. Now, my people, it's up to you. It's up to you what's going to happen. Whether the judgment's going to continue or whether there's going to be revival. The source is the same. The conditions preceding judgment and revival are the same. The results of both are the same. The results of judgment, God's glorified. God is honored because judgment brings humility. It can be done willingly, though, from God's people. And the people who determine judgment and revival are the same people. Do you know, in North Oglethorpe County, here in South Madison County, and wherever we are, East Clark County, wherever we are, I drive through. It was unusual for me. I've never lived in a place like this where you drive from here, you drive 5 miles, you go through Oglethorpe, you go into Clark, and then into Madison, back into Clark. And then you turn around, you go back into, just like that, you're back in Oglethorpe County. All on the same road almost, okay? But in this area, in our area here, when I think about the area, the community I live in, which is just down the street, and community across the street, down here and down Arnoldsville Road. I have a hard time saying Arnoldsville. The little town next door, just a few miles out from where I grew up, was called Arnoldsburg. And I always want to say Arnoldsburg, but it's Arnoldsville. People look at me and laugh when I say Arnoldsburg. Oh, okay. Yeah. And here on the road in front of the church, Hargrove Lake, out in Mitchell Farm, you know, the people, to some extent, what they're going to experience in the next, year, what they're going to experience in the next days in their future is determined by what happens in here. You see, it's not the people driving by outside. God didn't say if the people driving by outside the church will humble themselves and pray and seek my face. He said if my people will humble themselves, pray, seek my face. You see, it's not the drug dealers that's going to determine the future. Now, they'd be part of the future, but they're not determining the future. It's God's people that determine the future. It's not the educators. It's not the politicians. It's God's people. And as God's people, too many times, we sit in places like this and condemn what other people do, and why don't they do something? Why doesn't this, as one preacher said, it's not the problem's not the White House, the problem's my house. And what takes place in God's house? If my people called by my name, we are the ones that make the difference. You know, there are people drive by out here today, drive by while we're in here having church. And some people drive by with total disinterest. Some people drive by and look at those cars parked over there and says, look at that. Look at all them cars parked over there on Mother's Day. Why in the world do people do that? Why do they go to church? That's just the most ridiculous thing I ever heard in my life. You say, well, that's awful, man. You know, oh, boy, they ought to get right. Well, they ought to get right, yeah. That'd be sure. It'd be wonderful if they get right. But God's dealing with this area is not determined by them people driving by out there. It's determined by these people that are sitting in here. This is where it happens. This is the thing that makes the difference. And I don't know whether you want to make a difference or not. I don't know whether you want to have a positive influence for God and for good and for right and for righteousness, and for holiness, and for truth, that joy may be enjoyed. Joy may be enjoyed in our communities. And that we may have happy homes. We may raise children with the knowledge of God. Raise children that grow up to serve God. Raise children that have a consciousness of God. This is why, as a pastor, this is why my burden is for revival. This is why I said to the deacons, how long's it been since you've had a revival at Sunlight? I'd like to have a revival. I'd like to have a time that we have somebody come in and preach, and we invite some other churches to come and be part of this thing and join with us and pray revival and preach for revival and open our hearts for revival and try to have God move in our midst and work in our midst. That's why people from Royston are going to drive over here to be in church with us tonight. Grace Baptist Church, bring their choir. Sing with our choir. Their pastor, give us a word of exhortation. Our son Adam will be here to preach tonight. I'm overjoyed. There'll be people from Joy here tonight. From Joy Baptist that are here. And if they come, if Grace comes, if Joy comes, Sunlight ought to come. We ought to be here and seek God's face and say, God, give us revival and have our hearts open. We ought to. My people called by my name. We ought to humble ourselves. And say, God, your work's more important than my work. And your activities are more important than my activities. And your ideas are better than my ideas. And what you have for us to do is better than what I have for me to do. My people, called by my name, humble themselves and say, God, you're more important than I am. And what you say is more important than what I say, and what you think is more important than what I think. And I may not really grasp it, and I may not understand it, and I may not know all about it, but I recognize you as being the superior one. Humble themselves. We don't pray for God to humble us. Now, God can humble you if He needs to. But He said, humble themselves. Humble themselves. And pray. Oh, I hope you'll find some time today to pray for the service tonight. Pray for God's presence. Pray for God's power. Humble themselves and pray. Seek my face. To seek His face. I don't know if you've ever been lost or not. If you've ever been lost, especially as a little one. I remember seeking my mama. I was in the midst of a group of people, and I was just a little one. One of my earliest memories. I was in a group of people, and of course, just a little one, tottering around, and big people all over the place. I couldn't see faces, but I saw my mama because I recognized her coat. And I went to that coat, and I got a hold of that coat. And all of a sudden, I looked up, and this lady looked down at me, and it wasn't mama. Some other lady had on a coat like my mama's. And I remember, and I guess it's why it's a memory, is because the panic that struck me whenever I had grabbed hold of something that I thought was what I was looking for. And it turned out it was not the one I was looking for. And I was looking for mama. Now, I was intent about that. And there are times in our life, believers, there are times in our life that whenever we grab hold of something in life, we think it's the answer and what we're looking for, and all of a sudden we look up, and it's not what we were looking for. Seek my face, God says. Seek my face and turn from your wicked way. Whatever that may be, whatever it is, turn from it. Have done with it. That means I'm going toward this. I'm pursuing this. I'm spending my money on this. I'm spending my time on this. I'm giving my attention to it. And it's wrong before God. Turn from it and turn to God. All of that happens together. Seek my face. Turn from your wicked way. All of that happens at the same time. Seek. Turn. God said, I'll take care of it then. I'll take care of it. I'll take care of you. I'll take care of the situation. Then I'll hear from heaven. I'll forgive their sins. I'll heal their land. This morning, during the offering, I don't know how many of you recognize the song. We're going to sing it tonight. In the service, we're going to sing it. Do you really want revival? Great song written within the last 30, 40 years. Do you really want God's power? Do you really want God's presence in your life this hour? Do you really want revival? If my people, which are called by my name, will humble themselves and pray, and seek my face, and turn from their wicked ways. Then God says, I'll hear. I'll hear you. You want to have God's attention? That's the way to get it. I'll hear from heaven. I'll forgive their sins. Oh, what a joy. Sins forgiven. The land healed.